You're listening to Auto D, coming at you live.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to the Auto D Show here on Dave Pratt's Star Worldwide Networks, broadcasting from high above Camelback Road in beautiful Scottsdale, Arizona. I am your host, Otto Daniolo. And tonight, my guest is guitarist, singer-songwriter, Chad Wilson Bailey. Chad and I will be chatting about his career in music, the impact of the pandemic, and pretty much anything else that pops into our heads while we're sitting here. But first, let's have a song from the Fervor Records catalog. Here's one called Grin on My Face by Kubi Koo on the Auto D Show. Check it out.
Listening to Auto D, coming at you live.
And that was Grin on My Face from Kubiku here on the Otto D Show, which is brought to you tonight in part by my good friends at Fervor Records and also by TheRecordingArtist.com, where bands record one of their songs live online every Wednesday evening at 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, and you can participate. I'll be there running the show, but you can help out too. Sign up at TheRecordingArtist.com. And if you want to see behind-the-scenes footage and interview clips with the musicians, then watch my new reality TV show on Amazon Prime Video called The Recording Artist. I think it's kind of awesome. But now I know you're saying my weekly podcasts, my weekly live recording webcasts, my TV show, my concert schedule, records I'm producing, films I'm working on. How in the world are you supposed to keep up with all this? Well, download my app. It's free. And it's in your app store. It's called Otto D App. And then you'll get all the notifications when concerts are scheduled, when guests are announced, when projects are released. You can even contact me right through the app. But don't try to contact me right now because I'm about to do an interview. Speaking of which, let's bring on tonight's guest, singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, Mr. Chad Wilson Bailey. Hey, Chad, how are you doing?
What's going on, Otto?
Thanks for coming in and doing this.
Thanks for asking me. This is really cool.
Now, before we go any farther, what is your website? People need to check it out because you look so cool.
It's complicated.
It's complicated.
It's www.chadwilsonbailey.com.
All right. And I think all three are spelled just like you'd expect, right?
Yes.
There's not many ways to spell Chad or Wilson. Bailey, B-A-I-L-E-Y. That's really about it.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. And now you've been in the business for a while.
I have, yeah.
And you're recently married. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
That's a great way to start the new year.
My wife is sitting right next to us over here on the couch.
That's fantastic. But this last year has been absolutely, I don't even know, I don't even have a word for what it's been. I'm just glad it's over. I think everybody thinks and feels like January 1st, everything's just going to be different because 2020's gone. And that's not the case.
Yeah.
But it feels that way. What's this year been like for you?
You know, I know it's been a really difficult year for a lot of people, and it's been challenging for us too in a lot of different ways, but we're sort of the type of people that try and make the best out of whatever situation we're in. So we wrote a lot of music. We did a backyard remodel, and we kept ourselves busy, and you know, we opened a hot yoga studio in our house, and
cool.
You know, we tried to adapt to the new situation and try and keep it, positive as best we could.
You know? It's a major, major change. You mentioned you had over 300 dates on the books for the year.
So last year was just about 300, I think, and then, you know, January, February of 2020 were like really big months, and I was looking at March as being probably the busiest month musically of my life, and you know, the numbers were looking spectacular, and then you know, it all went away. Which I'm laughing about now, but I wasn't happy about then.
No, I mean, and to say it all went away sounds vague, but it couldn't be more accurate.
Yeah.
You know, I have so many friends all in the same boat. I mean, guys who tour Europe twice a year and the States the rest of the time, and every single piece of income just was turned off one day. Click, it's gone.
Yeah.
And their calendars haven't really started populating again yet, you know?
Yeah, I had private events scheduled out in California, which some of them have, you know, put pretty big deposits down on it, and they still want to have me out, but they don't know when, you know?
Yeah.
So it's weird. It's just,
I'm involved in one show like that in California where we took a deposit. It's a tribute band, actually, thing, and we took a deposit, and then it got canceled. It got rescheduled and got canceled, and we're like, well, do you want the money? Do we keep the money? And, no, you're in next year's schedule. Well, the way California's going, it'll probably get bumped another year. You know, if they're not ready by, I think it's rescheduled for May. So we'll see.
Yeah.
You know, it's nuts.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty crazy.
You know. So right now, though, you've got a couple things going on?
I'm getting busier, yeah. I have six residencies around town. Some weekly, some monthly. And I'm starting to do more corporate events slowly, private house parties. Mm-hmm. And I did a number of like socially distanced block parties, you know,
those interesting. Were
really interesting. We did some interesting shows during COVID too, where during the lockdowns, where I would play like one of the resort condominium complexes, and everyone would be out on their patio, and I would be playing down by the pool. And, you know, it's interesting, you know. So I still found ways to work, you know, to make money, but it was very different.
Yeah. They were going to do a show down on the Riverwalk through town where the artists were on one side of the canal and people could be on the other side of the canal.
Mm-hmm.
But then they were worried about people congregating too close together. And then, you know, it was like you had to wear a mask and they wanted the singers to wear masks. Mm-hmm. So then they basically said, well, we're just not going to do this.
Yeah.
It's stupid.
Yeah.
You know, it's a nice idea, but it didn't come together.
Yeah.
So it's like going forward, I think when I talk to my friends in the business, maybe I have the bleakest view of what's coming next. But how do you feel things are going to come back? Things are going to come back quickly, or the tour industry going to start happening again? Is everything just going to snap back?
I'm focused right now on just booking local shows, and I'm looking, like, usually booking about a month or two out. January is looking pretty full for me right now. February is starting to fill up a lot. And I'm really excited about the new album that we're recording. So even if things don't go as, you know, open up all the way, that allows me more time to work in my home studio and work on the new album. So, but I don't know. I've got a lot of friends in the music industry that are not working at all. You know, they don't want to work. And then other ones that are, you know, just, they're touring musicians and they're not touring at all, you know, and they don't have anything planned, you know, to tour. So, you know, I consider myself pretty lucky that I'm doing any shows at all, because, yeah, I love performing. I mean, that's really essentially what I do.
So now a lot of the shows that you're talking about doing through January and February, those are solo shows?
Just solo shows, yeah. Well, I've got some duo shows. Actually, I'm doing some duo shows with Creamy.
Okay.
Who was actually
David Libman here in town?
David Libman. He was at my house today. We were working over some songs.
And, oh, great.
I was showing him some of the new originals that I want to do with him. And so it's dual work, but yeah, mostly solo.
Okay. Now, you mentioned a couple times your home studio and a new album.
Yeah.
So describe your home studio to me.
Well, it's quaint. You know, it's perfect for me and Amanda. You know, it's just got a couple NS10s and Pro Tools and some larger JBLs for the bigs.
That's 99% of what you need.
Yeah.
If you got a one decent microphone, you're just about wrapped up.
Yeah. I mean, it's I've got an AKG 414 and a couple SM57s for miking, you know, the guitars. And, you know, I don't have anything really expensive like a Neumann or, you know,
Do you like drums in your house too? Do you bring in everybody, or do you do some of that at another facility and bring the files home?
Well, the last two albums were all done at my house, and then my brother mixed the album, and then Ray DeLeo, who you know, is famous for working with Filter and a number of other artists, he's also part of our network, and he helped mix the last two albums as well.
Cool.
And so, yeah, it's kind of like interesting to send the songs away and let them mix them and work on them, and then sending files back and forth.
Yeah, it is.
I prefer to work, you know, side by side, but they're two of my favorite artists, and none of us live in the same state, so
yeah,
that's just the way we do it.
Do you have a drummer here in town that you do for drum tracks, or are you having producers create the drum tracks and send you files?
I play a little bit of drums. Okay. My brother plays drums, and then Ray's incredible at laying drum, you know, creating drum tracks as well. But I have some favorite drummers that I love to use. Jason Weedman played some drums on Build Me a Fire, and David Libman is just an amazing drummer as well. There's so many good musicians really in Phoenix. It's crazy.
You know, there really is. And besides the normal guys that we think of as the good guys who have been session players and been in the market for a long time, there are a crap load of young bands coming up that are really good too.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal. You get on Instagram and start just looking for bands, and it's like, who are these guys?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just finding tons of them.
It's really cool. I feel like that the music scene in Phoenix is really abundant and kind of magical. It's like I constantly meet new people who just blow me away. So
yeah, I found the same thing with the recording show I'm doing. You can go to the site and stream all the songs we've recorded. And I was doing that the other day, and I think there's 25 up there now. And it's like, these are all good songs. 25 different local bands, and like every one has a really good song. And it's just one of their songs.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, wow,
yeah,
there should be 7, 8, 9, 10 crappy tunes up there.
Yeah.
You know, in most towns, you're not going to find 25 out of 25 that you want to listen to again.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many more. It's pretty wild.
Yeah, I agree.
Now, when you do band shows, do you have a core band that you use out live, or is it just you have to call a few people and rehearse and put it together?
It depends on who's available. There are definitely some go-to guys that I like to, and I wish I could, you know, work with more often, but I just don't get booked for a full band very often. If I do, it's usually a private event. And
primarily, that would be a cover material show, probably.
Yeah, exactly. But, I've used David a number of times, Jason a number of times, and bass players. There's just a ton of great bass players as well around town. But, I mean, just kind of depends who's available, mm-hmm. you know. Just run down the roster, look at, call people, text them, and find out, you know, are you available? Can you do it?
So, well, how long have you been in the Valley?
Since 2007, I think.
Okay.
But, I've been coming here since I was a child. My grandparents, my dad's parents retired here. So we came out here quite often, you know, since I was like two, you know. And
from where?
From, I don't know, my family moved around a lot. So I was just having this discussion with someone.
Military family or just moved around a lot?
No, it's my father was in the military, but he was, you know, doing PhDs and a couple different master's degrees. And so he was traveling for school, and then work took him a couple different places. So I don't know where we were traveling from at that time period. It might have been Missouri or could have been Virginia.
So you've lived all over the country?
Sort of. California, Idaho, Missouri, Colorado, Virginia, Minnesota. Did I say Minnesota?
Where in Arizona, Minnesota?
New Zealand. Eden Prairie, Minnesota.
Eden Prairie. I don't know where that is, actually. Is it northern Minnesota or southern?
I think it's right near...
kind of the middle.
Minnetonka and Apple Lake, you know?
Well, I used to go to Detroit Lakes, which is way north.
Yeah.
And had in-laws who retired up there, and we used to go there for Christmas. Of all things, let's go to northern Minnesota for Christmas. I can go ice fishing. It's nuts.
Yeah.
That's a crazy life. Now, you just mentioned New Zealand. How old were you when you lived in New Zealand?
20, 21.
So 22. You'd left the family. You were on your own when you lived there?
Yeah, I was sort of eager to get out and be independent.
So you didn't just leave the house. You left
the country. Two or three. Well, my family moved to New Zealand.
Okay.
And I moved to Colorado to make it big in a ski town with my band. I thought that seemed to be where we were going to make it big. That's in my head at 19 years old.
I
thought that was a great idea. But we moved out there with the band. And then after that, I moved to New Zealand and started a band there with my brother. And we kind of played all over New Zealand and released an album and played a big festival called Mountain Rock with bands like Midnight Oil and Yotu Yindi and like 35,000 people. That was a really fun experience.
That had to be fun. When you're 20 years old?
Yeah, that was good. That was good.
That's pretty cool.
I was always chasing that after.
Yeah.
I haven't played in front of 30,000 people since, but you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe after this interview.
There you go.
Anyone want to hire me for 30,000 people?
I won't play for less than 28,000 people. You know, I don't think I've ever been on a stage in front of that many people at all. But it's just playing in front of a few thousand people is wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
It's such a feeling.
Well, I play shows in front of, you know, sometimes 20 people.
Sure.
I love it.
Yeah, because that's different. It's more of a conversation, I think, when the crowd is smaller.
It's really intimate. Yeah. And I like hearing, I love taking requests and seeing what people like, mm-hmm. you know, seeing them get excited, you know, when they, oh, he's actually going to play the song I requested. That's so cool. And he knows it.
He's awesome. Like a jukebox.
Yeah.
Mommy, what's a jukebox?
Yeah.
So how long were you in New Zealand then? For like a few years?
My family lived there for over 10 years, but I lived there for a few years and then I moved back to the States and then I went back a few times. And my youngest brother actually just moved back to New Zealand for work. And so his wife, who's from New Zealand, and their three kids, they all just moved back to Auckland.
How do you like it there?
New Zealand's pretty amazing. It's a really great, really great country.
I mean, do you see that as a potential place to go back and live?
I don't, maybe eventually, but I love, you know, the States. It's kind of a small country, you know, but it's beautiful and the people are awesome and the beer is great. So, you know, who knows?
So summer vacations.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome. Now, earlier too, I mentioned that you were a multi-instrumentalist, but we haven't really mentioned what you play. What do you play? Well, you mentioned drums.
Drums, bass, a little bit of piano. I play great MIDI synth.
You know. Where's the quantize button?
Yeah.
Primary instruments, guitar.
Acoustic guitar and looping, you know.
That's an art, boy, that didn't exist a dozen years ago.
I didn't like it at first. I was really resistant to it. I bought one. I tried it.
As a listener, I was too. It's like, I don't want to like you because that I don't like what you're doing.
I was one of those people. Yeah. I was like, I don't like looping artists. You know, I just thought it was silly. But eventually I was like, you know, maybe I'll try it. And I think my brother's wife, Shelby, I think kind of talked me into it. She said, why don't you just buy one and try it out? And I was terrible at it. And I put it away for a while. And then, I don't know, for some reason I got it back out. And I tried it, and it was just like, really, I got it, you know.
Well, it's like anything else. I think you put a tool in an artist's hands, and they're going to figure out how they relate to it. You know, if you spend enough time on something, you'll find a creative way to use it.
Yeah.
So I think one of the reasons you may not like the loopers in the beginning is because it's an average guy who just loops a chord for 4 minutes. You're like, that's lame. You know?
Yeah.
But you find somebody who's really creating all these mouth noises to do a whole drum beat in sections and then turning parts on and off while they're playing other parts of the song. And I started to go, now your brain is really engaged right now.
Yeah.
And that's fascinating to still emote and play while you're doing that much work.
Yeah. Now, I don't want to, you know, put it out there that I'm like, there's some looping.
Super looper.
Super looper. There's some super loopers out there.
There are.
I use it just very sparingly so I can kind of create a background so I can do guitar solos over top of.
And how about these new, I don't know if they're new pedals. I don't get out much anymore, but especially this year. But bass drum pedals are like little pads you tap your foot on, but they give you a nice big boom coming out of the PA.
I haven't seen that.
It looks like a mouse pad.
Huh.
You know, you tap your foot on, you can change the sounds.
Oh, that's awesome. I'll have to look into
that. I saw a guy playing with one the other day, and I thought, we looked it up online. So there's a million little tools for the solo artist to play. PAs have gotten a lot smaller, made life a little easier for the solo act.
Yep, absolutely. So. Although I just bought, things are getting smaller, and I bought a QSC K12 sub, and now I lug that thing to almost every show, and I just love having that presence there. That low end is so cool now.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so.
Well, you have any kids? Well, when you get some kids, there you go. You like need some roadies. Here's son. Want to see what the music business is all about? Yeah. Carry this thing
for 10 years.
That's right. Now you again. We talked about the studio, your studio. We talked about you're working on a new record. How many albums have you done in your career?
I recorded an album in New Zealand, and under the band name Nacho Mama.
Nacho Mama.
Yeah. Which is, I don't know how we came up with that. And years later, when we were in Alaska doing shows, this was just a couple of years ago, we went up for the first time. There's actually a Mexican restaurant in this tiny little town in King Salmon called Nacho Mama. I was like, all right, well, I guess that's the universe's way of telling me that we're on the right path or something, you know? So I'm there. I recorded an album in LA. Then I've recorded two here. And then we're working on, you know, the fifth one. So
the home studio experience, they haven't all been that way.
No, the album in LA, I recorded with my brother. He was the chief engineer at the mix room, and he was doing a lot of great work with Filter and Kid Rock and Marilyn Manson and on and on and on. And we would go in, you know, after hours and work in the studio at the mix room in Burbank.
And everything was always smooth, never had any problems in the studio.
Well, he ran into a couple issues on bigger projects. I mean, it was pretty smooth. He's a great engineer. He's incredible. But our studio at our home, we've had a number of issues trying to get it going. And our brand new laptop with the brand new Pro Tools on it, like fried, and I had to send it back. And we had issues with, you know, speakers and our big knob, which is our controller for all our different speakers. And it was just one thing after another. And we bought a new MIDI controller for Ableton Live. It was a Push 2, and trying to figure that thing out, it was just like nothing was working creatively, and it felt like we weren't being creative at all. And then the lockdown happened, and the studio shut down at the same time with all these technical issues. And we said, "Screw it, we're just gonna make a couple dirty martinis and sit on our awesome studio couch, because every studio
needs the couch is working.
The couch is working great, and so is the vodka. So we sat down. We wrote an entire album's worth of material in like 2 weeks. It was really awesome. So
does Amanda write with you as well?
Yeah, she does. Okay. She worked with me on the last album, Origin of Light, and she's turned out to be this surprisingly gifted lyricist on this.
Awesome.
On this, which I really need, because
that's wonderful.
I'm a melody, like, sound guy, you know?
Right.
And I'm not much of a lyricist guy, but she's fantastic to work
with. That's good.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, we'll have to have Amanda on sometime, since we didn't give her a microphone today. Yeah. Yeah. I tell you what, Amanda, you shout your answers. But have you done anything in music before this? Or is this kind of co-writing thing your first real endeavor?
I mean, I was in band in high school, you know.
Okay. What did you play?
Flute.
You played flute in high school.
Drum major in marching band.
Drum major.
I played a little bit of violin, I played piano. So, I mean, I've played some instruments, you know, in my life, but I've never really written music until.
Cool.
She's a killer DJ. We got several pairs of Technics at the house, mm-hmm. with all the gear, and people always come in and they're like, "Oh, I didn't know you spin." I'm like, "I don't." She does. That's awesome.
That is cool. That's an art all in itself.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember the first record I did where we were using records to make a record, you know, where the producer was sitting there with a turntable.
Yeah.
And he'd find a beat. And this is, I mean, we're going back. This would have been like 1989, 1990, uh-huh. 91. And he's spinning the record. He's got this beat. And he says, "Okay, hit record." So I'm recording on a 2-inch tape machine.
Yeah.
And he spins the record and it goes one bar.
Yeah.
Doom, doom, ga, doom, 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 ga, and we stop.
Yeah.
Okay, now he's going to roll the record back, and I got to rewind the tape. So now I got to punch in at the end of that bar, and he's going to spin the record and drop the next bar. And we built this whole drum track.
Wow.
By him dropping one bar over and over and over. Now it's all on the computer on the grid, but we were doing that stuff off of a record on the tape. It's just nuts.
Yeah. Well, that's incredible that you guys were doing that.
And we're sitting there going, yeah, but it's... What about all these scratches and pops? And he's like, "No, that's cool." And I'm like, "No, that's not cool." As an engineer, you're like, "No, these are technical problems that we have to solve."
Yeah.
He's like, "No, these are really cool sounds that we want to love."
Yeah.
So and on that same record, you know, I hadn't done anything quite like it, and hadn't been working in R&B at all at that point in my career. And I did when we got done with this one, tracking this one tune, I threw up a real quick mix, 20 minutes. I pull up a mix, you know, because the producer was just scratched in the back of the room. So then I turn around like I'm really proud of myself because I think it sounds good. And he says, "Are you ready to get started?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And he comes down, sits down. He pulls every fader down on the board, turns the first one up and just completely changes the sound of it.
The control,
you know? And I'm like, "Okay, I obviously don't know where we're going, so I'm going to sit here and learn."
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of wild.
Yeah, I failed as a professional studio engineer. I wasn't very good. You know, I went to school for it and learned a lot.
Where did you go to school?
Los Angeles Recording Workshop. Okay. Back when it was in North Hollywood. Okay. Now it's right on Sunset Boulevard, but it was the old version of the school. Yeah, but I do the bare minimum for engineering, you know. My brother's really he's the genius behind the Pro Tools, but
okay.
I can click a few things with the mouse.
You know, it's nice how easy some of that is getting.
Yeah.
You've got all kinds of plugins and standard channels, and they even there's so many YouTube videos on what to do. So you really can get there a little easier without hiring a lot of help these days, and that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
What was the first instrument that you started playing?
I think piano. I played clarinet briefly, but that was, I think, a disaster for everybody involved.
Yeah. How many kids in the family when you were coming up?
I've got two brothers and a sister.
Okay.
And I feel like
did your parents put you all through piano, or was it your idea?
My mom wanted us all to play. We all took piano lessons. My grandfather was a very accomplished piano player, and I mean, there's some musicality in the family line. And then I think a great great aunt of mine had a big music school in Illinois somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But it was piano first, so I wish I would have kept up with it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I would have been a lot more accomplished today at it. something.
Yeah, I always tell kids when they're trying to figure out which instrument to play, it's like, play piano.
Yeah.
Because you learn music better in the sense that you see it linearly, and then you can learn, understand relationships better. If you start on a guitar, it's like, well, that note's in three places, so
yeah,
you know, it's harder to understand how the music relates.
Yeah.
Learning music on a guitar.
So the guitar is a lot lighter around my shoulders than a piano, so
very true.
I'm glad I switched to guitar eventually.
Very true. And eventually, mandolin.
Yes.
I just got my daughter a mandolin for Christmas.
Oh, that's cool.
And, or not a mandolin, I'm sorry. Ukulele.
Ukulele, yeah.
And I know what a ukulele is, but yeah. I actually never recorded one. And so she grabs this thing that she asked for, and I'm thinking, well, let's get out a book and figure out what a chord is. And she just starts playing. So apparently one of her friends has one and she's been banging around on it. And it's amazing how good it sounds. When your kids have an instrument like trumpet and they're learning to play it, that's disgusting, you know, to hear that until they're good. Or violin and you want to shoot yourself. Mm-hmm. But when they're playing ukulele bad, it sounds beautiful. It really still sounds good.
The ukulele, it's like, it's had this big moment recently. It's become so popular. And I don't know where or why it became so popular again. Was there an artist that you're aware of that like made the ukulele popular again? I think Eddie Vedder maybe did a song with a ukulele, but
maybe, I don't recall. That. Pretty wild. When did you write your first song?
I probably started writing in high school. I know a lot of artists are like, oh yeah, I wrote my very first song in October of blah, 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 you know, and it was called this and I still remember it. I'm not one of those artists. I wrote a ton of really terrible ideas down and wrote poetry and just was a terrible hack at it for a long time, and to the point that I don't think I'd want to remember any of those songs. But I started writing in high school and then feel like I'm always still working at it, trying to get better at it.
Is co-writing a better thing for you?
I love co-writing. Yeah, I really enjoy writing. Working in a studio with someone else, working on songs with someone else, I prefer it. Yeah, I think it's great to bounce ideas back and forth. Yeah.
Now, how about, you know, I guess before I just keep asking you questions and get to know you better, I should play some music because we have some songs.
Yeah, sure.
So let's play a song and then I can give you a couple minutes off here.
Okay.
I want to play a tune of yours called It's Your World.
Okay.
Tell me about that track.
It's Your World started like 6 years ago, really, and it was Build Me a Fire was recorded at my house, but it originally started off, it's an open tuning and some very unusual chords in it that I just kind of came up with, but the message is, it's your world, you get to choose what it's going to be. At the time, I had a friend living with me who was having a really tough time with stuff, and I was trying to help him understand that, like, he's not like a slave to the circumstances of his life. He can choose to do something else or react to things differently, you know. So it's kind of the message of the song.
Yeah, very cool. Who else is on this recording as we listen to it?
Do
you recall?
Well, I feel like Ray DeLeo is in certain respects because I think he did so much work on it. My brother is. I think my brother did drums on that one. And I did the bass and all the guitars. And that's about it.
Yeah. Okay. And you're doing the singing as well?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
There's piano in it too. I think my brother did the piano.
Okay. And was there a band name on this track at all, or is it strictly Chad Wilson Bailey?
It's just Chad Wilson Bailey.
Cool. Yeah. And where can people get this tune if they dig what they're hearing?
They can, they can actually buy it now in a lot of different places, and they can stream it live. The album was just re-released by Universal Records for worldwide digital distribution, which was kind of cool.
Cool. But, was it cut for Universal originally?
No.
So you did it independently, but they picked it up?
Yes. Just for distribution. So that was kind of cool.
That's awesome.
That was this last year, yeah.
Cool. Well, let's check it out. It's Your World from Chad Wilson Bailey on The Otto D Show.
Upon
listening to Auto D, coming at you live.
And that was It's Your World from Chad Wilson Bailey here on the Auto D Show. Yeah, baby! Awesome song. Very, very cool. Love that little keyboard on the end.
Thanks, man.
Very nice. So, you know, while the song was playing, we're sitting here, we get to pull our headphones off and talk, you know, so it's like, aha!
Oh, we talked about some good stuff.
Yeah, so now we got to go back and do a little review. But one thing that we kind of touched on that I want to know the answer to, because I wouldn't let you talk to me about it, and that is odd jobs. Have you ever, I mentioned or asked if you'd ever had any odd jobs.
Yeah, so...
And you made a good face, so I was like, stop right there. We'll talk about this.
I always wanted to do music for a living. I wasn't sure how to do it. It's not something everyone usually kind of tries to discourage you from trying to make music
anybody who has
career.
Any sense, yeah.
You know, so not to say, my parents were always very supportive of me playing
That's
music.
That's cool.
Yeah, I mean, I've done a lot of, when we drive around the valley, Amanda makes a joke that like, you've worked everywhere because I've worked so many different places around the valley, you know. And when I moved here, I was moving here because I was done. I was done with the music. I'm all finished. I'm not going to play music anymore. LA beat it out of me, you know. And there's a whole long story, chapters of going out to LA with another artist that I was working with and another band and you know, being homeless and living in a rehearsal space and just years of that. And then near misses with DreamWorks Records and Capitol Records and Atlantic and
all the romance of the
music business. And I just was fed up and tired of being broke. And I said, you know what, I'm going to run away and join The Office. And that's what I did. So I moved here and figured out how to sell mortgages. And so I did that for a while and worked at half the mortgage companies here in Phoenix. But I slowly started playing music again and started seeing that there's a lot of live music in town and started kind of following different musicians and going to their shows and picking up, you know, one or two shows a month eventually. And then that just kept going.
Well, it's interesting because when you were doing it for real and banging it out, being homeless and living in rehearsal halls, there was only one path, and it was the path you were on.
Yeah.
That was the only way to do music in your mind. So when you quit and got a job, now music wasn't something you had to do to get where you were going to go.
Right.
It became something you just started to do again and found that now that you don't have that goal, you have a million ways you can do music.
Right, yeah.
It kind of frees you a lot.
Yeah, it did. It's a really good point. Yeah.
And then speaking of playing live.
You're like a philosopher, Otto.
You know, that's the only way you can get good percussion tracks out of guys. Just listen to their problems and calm them down and say, how about the shakers on this one instead?
Yeah.
I mean, I've had I'm saying percussionist because there's one player in particular on a record I had to deal with a few times. And he said afterwards, he goes, I like him here. I think you should be my counselor. And I was like, I am your counselor, you know? It's just you do a lot of that to get people, especially inexperienced people who think a lot of themselves before they get in the studio. They are their performance on playback confronts their ego like a boxing match, and they have to survive that fight.
Absolutely.
And some of them have a real hard time getting through that when they're starting out. So you do become a counselor.
That is so true.
You're like, don't worry, the tape machine doesn't play back very well. You're better than this.
Yeah, yeah.
It must be broken. Don't worry, let's go again. You know, it'll do better this time.
Right. We just didn't have enough reverb on your voice.
Let's
do it with a little more reverb.
Yeah, I mean, you really need some support. And I know the first time I was in a recording studio and heard myself play back, I wanted to quit.
Yeah.
And I think it was that you either do quit or you just get better, you know, but you learn that under that microscope in the studio.
Yeah.
You know? And is that, what would do you prefer? Do you prefer that kind of work in the studio or do you prefer the live stage thing?
I think it's definitely the live. I love the interaction with fans and playing different places. I really enjoy going to different, you know, house parties or corporate events and to play in all the different resorts around our state. We live in a resort state, you know, it's just some amazing places to perform at. And in a studio, I mean, you can, it's kind of like a time machine. I feel like when you go into a control room, like 14 hours can, as you know, it can pass in the blink of an eye. And you're like, because you're having so much fun too. You know, you're like, how did 14 hours just pass by? I can't even believe it, you know? We came in, it was dark. It's dark again, you know?
Yeah.
I like studio work too, but I think live is where my heart lies.
And are you typically, you've always been the front man in charge of the bands?
Nope.
You've been a side man.
Oh, yeah.
What do you prefer
there? I was
there?
For a long time.
What do you prefer there?
I kind of like both. I think I like being the front guy now. I really enjoy it. It's funny. It's like, why does singing feel so good?
I know. Screaming, in particular.
Screaming. It just feels like, yeah. It's very cathartic.
I mean, there's nothing I like to do more than Dizzy Miss Lizzy on stage. And people look at me funny because I'm this old guy up there just dying.
Yeah.
I love it. It's just so much fun.
It's funny. No, I played lead guitar and kind of was like co-producer, backup singer for an artist for a number of years. And we went out to LA and we shopped, records, and we had a big manager and we did all that. And I was just the side guy for that. And then, but it, I don't know, eventually, again, like it just kind of happened.
I found as a leader of the band, until you're big, you're in charge of everything. You got to book everything. You got to book the rooms. You got to book the rehearsals. You got to talk to everybody. There's a lot of work when it's your show and you're the man.
Yeah,
and I'm finally, for the first time in my life, a side man on a project, and it's like, you mean there's my itinerary and there's my hotel and you're going to take me there and then I'm supposed to be at soundcheck and then I'm supposed to be at the show. And
oh, that sounds nice.
I've never been a side man where. I can see how you could become a diva because you're like, where's the food? There's supposed to be food here. It's like, well, can't you go get some? What are you worried about? Well, of course I can, but I'm sorry, I forgot. This usually they put food up.
Yeah.
So it's funny just being a side man. It's made, to me, it's made those shows like mini vacations. I leave town and I'm back a couple days later.
What are you doing?
Well, that's actually with a tribute band that's been playing all over the country. And then they needed a new front singer for the show and they asked me if I'd do it. Okay. And I looked at my wife and I said, honey, do you know Brooks and Dunn? Because I'm like, I know the name, but I don't know any of the songs. She said, I love those guys. So, okay, I'll do it. So I had to learn. I do Ronnie Dunn. I glue a beard on and I put the cowboy tattoo on my arm and wash it off.
Oh, wow.
And then we go all over the country and I don't have to. They didn't even want me to learn the songs on guitar because Ronnie only plays a couple chords and he quits all the time. He'll play like two bars and then quit and stand there and sing. And
really?
So he said, if you learn the songs, you're going to play them. So don't learn them. So I just kind of play a couple chords and stop all the time and stand there and just sing. So I'm wired up with a wireless pack and a copy of his Strat, and I don't even sound check an instrument. I just go on stage. And
was it difficult learning the songs? Because I know for me, like if someone asks me to play a song, if I don't like know it in my head, it's hard for me to play it, right?
I had to memorize 22 tunes I'd never heard in 30 days.
That's tough. You must have listened to those nonstop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really did. It was a lot of work.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you something. Ronnie Dunn's a hell of a singer.
Yeah.
I really gained a lot of respect for him. Not that I didn't have it. I just was unaware of the guys.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's been a ton of fun to try to do the material.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been kind of a gas. But coming up for you now, you've got, we're at the end of the year. Today's what, the 30th or 29th or something stupid? I mean, the year's almost over.
29th.
You got a New Year's Eve gig coming up?
Yeah, so one of the residences that I have is at Wild Vine Uncorked. It's in, I believe it's in Chandler. It's in Gilbert, yeah.
Okay, they kind of bleed together.
Yeah, so I play there every Wednesday, 7 to 9, but then they wanted me for New Year's. So she actually booked me for New Year's like a year ago because I did New Year's last year, and she said, I just want you again. So so that's going to be great. And looking forward to it because it's fun. And it's not going to be a huge blowout, tons of people thing. It's kind of like almost invite only private event. So, but it's going to be great. It's a great restaurant.
Yeah, this year everything's weird. So
yeah,
how do you do a socially distanced, balloon drop at a end of the year party? It's going to be weird.
Yeah.
Speaking of weird, was there ever a job you thought you would do instead of play music? Was there a career path you wanted?
I don't think there really was I really wanted to become a fireman or a doctor. I didn't know. I just really loved music from a really young age.
So once you started playing, that was pretty much it?
Yeah, I was a really big skateboarder, and for a brief period of time, I thought maybe I could be a professional skateboarder, but then I saw how good some of my friends were, and I was like, well, that's not going to happen.
I'm not going to work that hard.
I'm just not going to put my life and legs in that much jeopardy. But then I started playing guitar and electric guitar, and I remember really listening to Led Zeppelin albums, like early Led Zeppelin, and just being like, what is in Black Sabbath and just being like, this is incredible. Like a song like Into the Void. You know, it's just like, wow.
We were lucky. I mean, when I say we, I say people near my age. And, you know, I imagine you're within 10 or 15 years, I hope. But
I'm 22.
Then your parents had great records. But, I mean, like, bands can't be like that anymore. You know, like Led Zeppelin could play any style of music they wanted.
Yeah.
From jazz to rock to Americana to country. They could play whatever they wanted.
Yeah.
And it went on the album because it still sounded like Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
And those days don't exist anymore in the record business. You have to, it's much more narrow.
Yeah.
But we came up at a time when bands could really express whatever they wanted to. And it was an incredible time.
That's a great point. And it's something I talk about a lot with Amanda. Is I'm really happy not being on a record label because I tried so hard for so many years to do it, and then I never really thought about it, but like once you're on a record label, they want you to produce a certain type of sound, a certain type of musicality, and
if it's successful, they want another one just like just it, like only it. A little different,
yeah,
quick,
yeah. And I love so many different types of music,
yeah.
And I like being able to create, like this last album, Origin of Light, was totally different than Build Me a Fire. It was kind of a concept thing, you know. It's very mellow, but singer-songwriter-ish, you know. And I love being able to have the freedom to do that, you know. And then you can still put out the album. It might not sell, you know, hundreds of thousands of copies, but albums don't sell hundreds of thousands of copies anymore anyway. So it's just nice to be able to create whatever I want to create.
Well, and the tools today, you kind of bring it back to the independent artist too. You can, there's so many programs, especially through the holidays, you see on sale looping programs and samples and pre-recorded chord progressions and automatic chord progressions, and you just turn a knob and it changes what chords they're playing, and then you just put a melody on it. You know, it's amazing how much help you can get. And I saw something recently where the London Symphony Orchestra realized, you know, they were going to go out of business because no one wants to spend that kind of money, but everybody would spend a little money, and they started selling time in 6-minute increments. So if an independent artist just needed one score on their record, they could buy the orchestra for 6 minutes, and they would go in and cut all of the stuff in a day. So they're getting their wage, but you're only paying a couple $100 to get the symphony on your track.
Wow.
Because it was, you're buying 6 minutes.
I didn't know we could do that.
I didn't either. This just happened. I read about this on, well, it just happened. But right before the pandemic, this is what they were doing as a business model. So I don't know. I haven't looked since. But I mean, how would you like that? If you have somebody who can do the score for you, create the part for a full orchestra on a tune, and not have to spend $20,000 to get that cut.
That's so cool.
I know.
Do you use Ableton much?
I know a lot of people who do live, and I've seen it, and I've hit the space bar a couple times.
Yeah.
But I've never created a file in it or messed around in it.
It's pretty cool, and it works so flawlessly with Pro Tools.
Yeah.
It's kind of neat. I'm a total novice at it. We are, but we're kind of figuring it out. And the Push 2 is kind of a cool accompaniment to
Well, to Ableton program. Is what everybody seems to use for the stage shows when they're using background tracks and performing. You know, that seems to be the most popular for recording and using all that stuff.
I've never been very good at playing along to back. Nothing wrong with playing along to backing tracks and stuff, but for me, it almost just feels like wearing a straitjacket or something. Like
to me, totally.
I love just being able to improvise and
Totally. I have two primary tribute groups I'm in. One is that Brooks and Dunn thing, which is all to click. And one is a Lennon show I do, which is my show.
Oh, cool.
I'm in charge, and there's no background tracks. We use 9 players, and if things go off the rails, I love that. I like it being real and being live.
Yeah.
And one time on the Brooks and Dunn show, the drummer who runs the tracks started the wrong song. It starts with an a cappella guitar, and then he's supposed to fire up the track. And you hear a count off in your earpiece, 1, 2, 3, 4, and the band comes in. He started the wrong one, so the band comes in wrong, and he goes, oh, wait, wrong song, and he stops it. And so...
Oh, what a nightmare.
But the thing is, we talked about being on stage, so I ran up to the microphone. I said, stop, stop. Like, I stopped the song.
Yeah.
And everyone looked at me. And then I went to the lyric. He just sang something about, you know, losing the diamond ring. And I says, has anybody ever lost a diamond ring? Let's see a show of hands. So I just took over this hole.
Yeah, nice.
You know.
Well done.
And then they all raised their hand. And I said, on purpose?
Yeah.
A few of them left their hands up. I thought that was kind of funny.
Do you have any favorite John Lennon songs? Like, what are your top 3 Lennon songs? I'm a huge John Lennon fan.
Well, I think probably my top songs were songs that most people wouldn't necessarily want us to play, but because they were kind of weirder. But I loved a lot of them. One was Love, which is a beautiful song that a lot of people aren't real familiar with. It's just gorgeous. But Watching the Wheels was always a fun one to play, which is later. But I think off of the Imagine album, I liked stuff like, you know, How Do You Sleep was just a freaking fun one to play. Mm-hmm. Really weird to get the band to play that song. I couldn't tell you my top three, but there's just some great material.
You said one of my favorites. I mean, Watching the Wheel, I love performing that song. I think I perform that almost every show sometimes. I think.
Yeah. Sitting here watching the wheels go round and round.
Yeah.
Of course, I haven't sung or anything, but that's a great song.
It is.
You know, and I fake piano in the show, and I have a great piano player.
Yeah.
Because I could try and play Instant Karma, but I'd be a few wrong notes.
Yeah.
So I get a keyboard player, but I play guitar in the show. So. Well, listen, man, what else have we got to talk about? You have an Instagram account.
It's CWB Entertainment LLC, and it's a brand new Instagram account. It's really fresh. It's like, so if you want to get on there, like, you know, be one of the first people to follow it, you know, I think I've only got like 20 followers, you know.
Cool. You're an elite Instagram account.
Yeah, I'm doing the exact opposite of what everyone else is doing.
That's right. You know? Yeah, I don't want a lot of followers. I just want a few.
Yeah, you know, really important followers.
There's one other thing I'd like to ask, because I don't know, you know, from an audience point of view, who really listens. It spans all kinds of different groups of interest. But you mentioned getting distribution from Universal on this record last year, just for distribution. For a lot of groups, that's attractive. How did that happen for you? Did they find the music someplace? Did you have a relationship or a buddy who pitched it? What happened?
It's all about connections, folks. It's all about who you know.
So you knew somebody.
Yeah, who was a big fan of the album.
Cool.
Really big fan of the album. And they were searching for it. They were like, Alexa, play, you know, Build Me a Fire. His favorite song on the album is Tycho's Star. And he was like, play Tycho's Star. And like he realized he couldn't find it anywhere. And it's a lot, kind of a long story, but I dropped the ball on getting that album out digitally, and I sold it for years, just, you know, at shows. He was like, I want to release this record.
I
was
like, cool.
Through Universal? He's like, yeah, I'm gonna. So he pitched it and worked it and figured out how to do it and got him to sign it. So, and now it's everywhere, so you can hear it.
Well, congratulations, and that's awesome. That's very, very cool. Oh, and there's the music.
Oh.
So we're coming up on the end of the show, so shut up. No more talking from you. Do you ever watch Seinfeld?
I used to watch it religiously, yeah.
Just reminding you, a friend of mine is the soup Nazi, so no soup for you. He always does that.
Otto, thanks for having us.
Hey, man, thanks for coming on.
Really great to meet you.
So I look forward to seeing you play out and checking out the new record when it's done. When can we expect the new album?
Oh.
All right, never mind. 2021.
Perfect.
Yes. It's right around the corner. All right, guys. Take care.
Thanks, bud.